Thank you, Brother Mike. That was a very enlightening presentation. A lot of stuff I had no idea about, how important he was and key in getting many of the beliefs that we hold today started. While some of your slides up there, you said, oh yeah, we believe in these, in some of these things, not all, but in some of these things. The one that stuck out to me was free preaching.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to even fathom a world where at least we can discuss some of these things, even if we disagree on some of these things. That's not the world that he was a part of.
No, and Zibnik, his arch enemy, was trying to shut him down pretty heavily.
Right. Fascinating. Open it up for questions. If you're a brother in the church, please raise your hand, and Logan will bring you the microphone. Bartshaw.
Oh, that was awesome, Mike. Thank you very much. I've got a couple questions. The first one is, how did Wycliffe dodge getting burned at the stake? I mean, obviously, he wrote all that inflammatory material, which caused Huss to...
I don't know. That's an excellent question, because he dodged getting burned at the stake, but he didn't dodge getting scattered over the River Swift, his bones being burned about, 40 years later or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. I really do not know, because there were people in England who did get burned at the stake, such as William Tyndale and others.
Yeah.
But he seemed to escape that for some reason.
Yeah, and that quote, Huss's quote about you can cook the goose, but that's got to be a sham. It's too awesome. I mean, obviously it's possible, but what a great quote. And then the second question I had was, why didn't the Hussites... You know, that Huss obviously was getting closer to the true gospel, you know, as he did in his time. But why didn't they understand that pacifism? Why were they violent?
I think they were so enraged because of the political mix of going on. Now, again, I don't have any specific sources to go to quote, to prove that. But it just seems to me like, it was such, Huss had been promised, safe passage, he's burned at the stake, it just ignites a firestorm. And you think about mob mentality, it doesn't take much.
Right.
And then it begins to build on itself. So I don't know.
Just feel so sympathetic towards John Huss. And then it just makes you so sad knowing that he probably wasn't teaching pacifism, or his followers would have been pacifists too. So it just breaks your heart.
That's an interesting point too, because there are a lot of issues that we don't even teach until they become controversy. I mean, who would have thought about trying to hammer out all the arguments about cups and glasses and all this stuff until they became an issue? Maybe that wasn't an issue during his life. He had other fish to fry, and so,
Thanks, Mike. That was great. I love a good lecture. My question is, what, in your opinion, is the value of being familiar with, becoming familiar with these men, their lives, the events of their history, perhaps even their writings? What is the value for us in being educated about all those things?
That is a fantastic question. In fact, I have several slides on that very issue, but due to my fear of being burned at the stake, I put them over into the appendix side of things. But those three issues that Huss, at the very end of his, system is broken, whatever the other two were. Those are questions that we need to be constantly asking ourselves, because, it's been said that those who don't study history are doomed
to repeat it, or something to that effect. And so, there's nothing new under the sun. So these trends that Huss saw, whether it's corruption in power, clergy becoming too self-centered, those can repeat themselves over and over, and probably do. Well, they do repeat themselves over and over. That's human nature. And so we need men like Huss who are willing to say, I'm going to stand up against this. And they're probably going to be crucified for it, but we need to read that stuff so we can, at least if that's your thing. I'm not saying everybody needs to read Huss, but we need to know that there will be these trends that led to more and more corruption. The Catholic Church didn't get to where it was overnight. It was a system of corruption that built upon itself. there may be things amongst us, which I think kind of goes back to Roger's view or Roger's presentation, that we need to constantly revisit. And that doesn't mean we need to be, you know, change agents to the point that we create division, but we need to be introspective. And I think that's one of the things about the church, and I mean that whether it's our generation or, is we're not terribly introspective sometimes. The Catholic Church wasn't either. It was the way it was, and that's good enough for them. And you get somebody who is a little bit more introspective and willing to kind of push things, and then it really gets nasty. So I think if we all were a bit more introspective, especially on a congregational level, we could say, you know what, maybe that's tradition, maybe it's not. Maybe we should study this, think about it in a non-emotive way, and come to a better understanding of what God expects of it. I think the church is indeed ever reforming. You know, I think sometimes, you know, we view ourselves as products of the restoration. And that almost implies it's done. We've restored it. Like you get that 57 Chevy, it's a mess. You restore it, it's done. You don't touch it. But reformation, which I think they were wrong in a lot of their ways, but at least they had, I think, the mentality of we've got to constantly keep working on this. And I think it's easy to say, well, we're done. You know, we've got it.
If I may.
You may.
Oh, thank you. There's a couple points that I'm thinking about, too, that I'd like to add to that, in the sense that what's the benefit from it? Why should we look at figures like this? For one, people in the world know this history a lot better than we do, and they'll use it against us. Or to the extent of, they'll say, well, look at all these things. You know, this is one of those guys that, you know, he tried to buck the trend, and then look at his followers, like Bart was saying, go around and invent pistols and howitzers. And I found that very interesting. But the second thing is sometimes, I heard a quote once that sometimes we stand on the shoulders of great men, we think we're flying.
Interesting.
And that stuck with me because John Huss is one such man that in a culture that we can't really imagine in our Protestant-dominated American world, stood up and influenced countless people. And we think, well, we don't need him or we're beyond him. And I think there's a level of gratitude that we need to look at history with and say, you know, these guys weren't perfect. We wouldn't fellowship with them now, probably. But we do need to have a level of appreciation for the work that they did.
Yeah, I think there's a providential history going on behind what happens in the world. You know, we may not agree with these guys, or they may be wrong on many, many points, but God is providentially working all the time. And so, there's a challenge in my faith. What God would do to him and file every way. To bring us, I mean, you know, years ago I did a study on John Huss, and all these slides, we didn't even mention John Huss because I didn't really know. Martin Luther's where I started. Well, Martin Luther was influenced by John Huss, so was Wycliffe and others. So, and again, not everybody is going to be academically interested in this, and that's fine. There's no reason necessarily, but it does give a lot of insight.
Both of you brothers have done an amazing job, but I do have a question concerning some of the issues that those men had. Mm-hmm. But even within the congregations that we're affiliated with, if one have a problem with another one in teaching, the first thing comes up is disfellowship. But as on a spiritual level, how can we fix division amongst ourselves?
Well, I think there are several factors. Number one, we have to go back to the word. But number two, we have to be gentle. We have to be gentle and meek in our approach. And I really like the analogy that Roger used of what do you say, watchdogs versus
guard dogs
versus,
yeah.
Versus what?
He's right there.
Where? I thought you're not, Roger. So what was your dichotomy there between the dogs?
Yes, guard dogs and guard dogs.
Yeah, and I think it's the attitude issue, you know, and I think a lot of it could be solved. And then also, I'm very, very strong on congregational autonomy. And while I do believe that we are in a brotherhood, and I do believe that we, you know, should at least listen and be kind and considerate to other groups, what we do in our local congregation is really, to me, kind of the end of the game. In other words, we listen, we weigh, but then we decide at home. And I think that's part of, in fact, if we have developed this all out, I think that's one of the things, is you have the Catholic structure that's dabbling into all these countries and everything, and they're trying to sway people. And I think that God's system of autonomy takes care of that, because we're independent. So, yeah, good question.
So all the comments so far have been excellent. Something that I see when you kind of examine this history is that you see that it was a steady progression of men trying to gain knowledge. It was probably circuitous because they had to find a way to get their hands on the Word of God in order to come to these conclusions. So we see over time this evolution, and we see this early into the Restoration period in the United States with, you know, the work of Campbell and ever-increasing knowledge. And I would say that we're more refined today and more restorationist than John Campbell was in his time, because we've had the benefit of that time and access to God's Word. When it comes to these individuals, he made an interesting theological point there about the invisible church. I was wondering kind of what's your theological thoughts on that, because I think as someone who's a convert and didn't always necessarily grow up around the church, you know, I maybe have a little bit of a more introspective take on that I see individuals that are on this path to gaining knowledge about God. Maybe they did submit to an immersion that in their mind was for the forgiveness of sins, regardless of what the people around them hold in their mind, regardless of what the worship assembly is doing. So I find his point that there could be people in a myriad of churches that at least where they stand right now in the judgment of God might be Christians. And I'd be interested to see what you thought about that.
Well, that's an interesting discussion, because, you know, even now, once in a while, we'll run across someone or some group that seems to have no connection to us, but they're virtually the same as far as what they believe, basic tenets. Well, how did that happen? Well, I don't know. And, you know, I'm much more willing as I get older to say, you know what, I don't know who all's out there and what God's going to do with them. I don't know. But it shouldn't distract me from what I know locally. And so, you know, if there are people out there that are doing the best they can, God saves, wonderful. I'm very comfortable leaving it there, because, you know, the secret things belong to the Lord, and there are a lot of things we don't know. I think we should be humble as we approach issues like this, because it's easy to draw our wagons in a circle. Now, I'm not getting liberal here. I'm not getting saying we open fellowship. I do not believe that. But we sometimes draw our wagons in a circle so tightly that we end up running over each other. And I think we've got to say, okay, this is what we believe congregationally, but what God does with others. And that doesn't stop us from teaching what we believe to others with gentleness and respect. Because, hey, that's our job. If we believe something, we should teach it.
So how's that for a non-answer?
It's not bad.
Yeah, thanks.
Any other questions? Doesn't appear so. Do you have any?
Well, yeah, just one or two. I thought, you know, first of all, thanks. I actually put this study together months ago, and then I put it on the back burner, and it really got cold. And so I was trying to heat it up over the last week and you know, sort of scorched some parts of it. But I thought, you know, if if we had a look-alike contest of John Huss, I think Josiah would win if it just grows a beard a little bit more. Well, I mean, you know, look at him there. I mean, as a compliment, Josiah. No, I don't have anything else. Thank you. Thank you very much.